afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 80th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During the show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guest is Orson Horkler. He is a Finnish carpenter and does work throughout southern Maine, and he's also a street artist, musician, and songwriter. Orson, who's also sometimes called Pigeon, has a unique immigration story in that he was born to Hungarian and Moroccan immigrants in Philadelphia, but then moved to the suburbs of Paris, France, where he was raised. When he returned to Maine as a young adult, he had a French accent and found that he had more in common with the immigrant population than the native-born residents of Ellsworth, Maine. And he's here today to share what he has found. And so thank you for coming on the show today, Orson.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start in France and talk about what France was like for you first before we go anywhere else.
When I tell people I'm from France, the picture of lavender fields and the Eiffel Tower and all that stuff, very glamorous things. And I grew up in a suburb of Paris. A lot of the suburbs in Paris are sort of the inner cities, the American inner cities. So I grew up in a place where there were a lot of immigrants. Depending where you went, there were places where it was 90% immigrants or kids of immigrants. There was a lot of racial tension. There were gangs, and very little sense of belonging to something. So one of the first things that really struck me when I came to the U.S. was how almost anybody had a sense of the belonging to the same nation. And while, you know, it can lead to some pretty sort of nonsense at times, I think where the fact that where I grew up, but there was a total lack of national identity, shows like a really deep failure, societal failure. So yeah, I grew up in a place like never really feeling like I belonged there. And there was nothing to do. I mean, they opened up a movie theater about 50 minutes from where I lived. And within 2 days, it got burned to the ground because somebody didn't want to pay a ticket. So yeah, that was, yeah. So
you're
I grew up in northern suburb. Yeah, it was rough.
Yeah.
And it was south, you know, it was an American inner city without guns.
And without English.
And without English, yeah. Yeah, lots of French, lots of Arabic, but no English.
And
yeah.
No guns. That's an interesting twist.
Yeah, that's it's something that's very different because while I did, by the time I was 16, I saw three people get murdered. But I think it's very different from let's say South Central, where it's every day, perhaps, and when there are kids, really young kids that are on the line, and yeah.
And what was the feel around immigration where you were growing up? Did people talk about racial differences and immigration, or was it just folded into the mix there?
Well, like on the street or at school, it was something that was always there. It was very conscious. I mean,
to
be from where I'm from. often, even people who were of French descent would take on the accent of an Algerian immigrant in order to say like, hey, we're from here. We're from the Yvelines, from the 778, you know, the area where I grew up. So that was something we're sort of conscious in a way of we belong here as in a place where there's a lot of immigrants. At the same time, on a national level and political and in the news, it was very taboo to talk about it. And the only people talking about it were a right-wing party called the Front National, which was, you know, they were having meetings in Austria with neo-Nazi parties and all that. So since I've left, the discourse has changed a lot, where people are with Sarkozy, the president who really rode that line between being extreme right and simply trying to open the dialogue. Now that I think there's a lot more, it's not a lot more okay to talk about immigration linked to gang activity and integration issues and all that stuff. So
being from France, I'm imagining that a lot of people tell you they've been to France and that the French people didn't like them. Does that happen?
Yeah, of course. And this is what I say. So I'll say, okay, well, why do you think they didn't like you? Oh, because they don't like Americans, because they don't like our politics. I say, that's not true. We don't, in most places in the world, people are not going to associate you with the politics of your government. And then I say, well, tell me what happens. Well, you know, I stopped this guy in the street and I asked him for the direction to the Eiffel Tower, and he just looked me up and down and smirked and walked away. And so I always say, you know, that's what we do to each other. You know,
there's nothing new there.
Nothing. It's not because you're American. Yeah. And that's the one thing that really struck me when I came to the U.S. was how nice people were and how, I always think you can tell a lot from a culture when a word gets corrupted. And in France, when you say il est gentil, and where I grew up, if you say il est gentil, which just means he's nice, it means that this person is a fool. He's influenceable, and he's easily taken advantage of, and you feel sorry for him. So, and the fact that I think in the U.S., like it's a real value. Like being nice to people is a value, and that's something I've really liked from the minute I came back. So
that's very nice. I hear this from a lot of my guests.
Really?
That it was the most important thing that struck them when they came. They can't believe that the person next to them on the bus asked them how their day's going. They're thinking, do I know you?
Yeah, especially where I grew up, because I remember being in Bangor, Maine, and when I was 17, I was visiting my dad one of the first summers I came back, I was waiting for the red light to turn to walk across the street, and there was this old lady next to me, and she started talking to me about the weather. And I was like, wow, if I'm a young person where I grew up, they'd want to run away from me. You know? She's like trusting me. And so that really meant a lot. And it still does to this day. It's like probably my main reason for being in the U.S.
The kindness?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah, because I think that's the strength. And where I grew up, there was so much posturing. There was so much of like you act tough in order to exert dominance or just to not appear weak, and that's something that I just never liked. I feel like real strength is actually being nice, being kindness, you know. So
were there other first impressions you had when you came?
Oh, so not so good ones. One was the extreme poverty. I did not imagine that there were places in the developed world that where there was such poverty. I did not imagine that there were people with teeth missing or with no teeth at all. Going to state fairs felt like seeing movies of medieval Europe, like when they do comedies about medieval Europe in France. And then when I was 19, after a year with my dad and a bit cabin feverish, I ran off to New Orleans. So I lived there for 6 to 9 months. I forget exactly, because time stops in New Orleans. And also exploring Louisiana, it was really struck me, like the extreme poverty and like how people were living in shanty towns and what I call shanty towns. And there's even a bumper sticker down there that says Louisiana, third world, and proud of it.
Wow.
I saw the Beasts of the Southern Wild, that movie, not too long ago, and that's a really accurate description of how some of the houses were. So that's something that struck me. And then one thing that interests me with all cultures, and even now when I'm talking about African friends, is always gender differences. I find that fascinating, and how we construct like the things that are totally artificial that mean nothing, and we are so attached to them. So, for example, I was really surprised how here there was a manly thing to drive a big truck, for example, but yet the truck was automatic. And in France, you'd never catch a dude driving an automatic. It's like for old ladies or people who are missing an arm. Like I had an uncle who was missing an arm, so he had an automatic. And so I find, and even the gym, for example. So in Maine, I was getting less exercise. So I was at the University of Maine for a couple of years, and I remember saying, oh, I should probably go to the gym. But it took me like 2 years to actually step foot in it, even though I knew, ideally, I would have liked to be confident enough at 18 to, or 19, 20, whatever, to not care what people think and to not, but it took me a while it took me 2 years almost to step foot into the gym, because at the time in France, it was really just a thing either for women or for homosexual men to meet up. So, and then I walk in, and then these guys are like lifting weights, looking themselves in the mirror, and that's also kind of taboo. And you know, there's a lot of I feel that so men pay a lot of attention to their physique here, and their at the same time, I know that, you know, from the time I started. I came here and started working at 18. I was on job sites in Northern Maine, and at lunch break, I'm like crossing my legs, reading the paper, you know, and they're like calling me names, you know. So yeah,
those cultural differences
are fascinating to me.
They are fascinating. The things we think are manly aren't necessarily.
Like here, there's even foods that are, you know, that are gender specific. So
what are some male foods here?
Well, the whole thing with the barbecue and the salads and the. You know, there's, I don't know.
How about moose jerky? Is that female or male?
I don't know what the Americans think. I should ask you that. But I find it interesting that Americans take a lot of room. In fact, it's not just that they tend to have more weight or that they're taller, because they are really taller. I was one of the tallest kids in my school growing up, and here I'm average, you know.
And how tall are you?
6'1", I think, yeah. So, yeah, Americans take a lot of room. In fact, it expands outside their body into this thing called personal space, and that's really hard for me and for my African friends to learn that at first. And that's their, like, if I'm standing on the bus next to you, I don't know you, I'm, like, right there, you know, or if I'm talking to you, you know, so... Yeah, the personal space thing is something that usually people who come here have to learn. And I watch some of my friends that haven't learned that yet, and I'm like, dude, you're like...
Back up.
Yeah, yeah, you totally...
So you said you felt like you needed to find immigrant friends to be friends with here to help you sort through this cultural difference for things like job searching, dating in the United States, and what do you do with emails here? Do you feel like you belong here? And how do you balance that? Because, you know, you've come with an accent. And so I actually, when I met you, I thought you were from somewhere else, because in some ways you are, born in the U.S., but
right,
raised in France as a French guy.
Right.
Right?
Right. So, yeah. And even in France, I was there. I was so young. I was 3 or 4 when I arrived. So I never... Culturally, I think I never had time to be Americanized. And it was just, people just knew I was from the U.S. And sometimes they would talk about it and be like, oh, he's the American, or call me the American. But yeah. I think, so I feel the need to be among other immigrants, even though they're from different, their culture is just as different as American culture was to me when I got here. Like, a lot of my friends are West African and Central African. But I feel it feels really good for me to be amongst other people who are also experiencing culture shock, because it's really, I spent so much time in Northern Maine where I'm the only one experiencing it, and nobody really realizes it. And I've been here for 18 years, and it doesn't... People think... This is what the curve of culture shock is. You get here, and it's like the exotic culture shock. You know, that's the whole beef jerky and the moose antlers on the wall, and it's all cool and all that. And you go hunting, after maybe in the five year span, it goes down. You're like, well, I'm well integrated now. I get it. And then around the 10 year span for me, it's like I just realized, wow, I don't get anything. I still, you know, still so much I don't. Yeah, and the deeper you go in relationships with friends or lovers or whatnot, the deeper you realize that there are differences. And then even if superficially, you can have a life where you have, you know, professional and get along, And so, yeah, I think that's the balance. Like, I feel like it's this give and take where I help a lot of my immigrant friends with things like you mentioned, work search or advice on cultural stuff. And then I get so much from it. Either it's just from the food they cook when they invite me over, or
and then you can speak French too.
Yeah, I can speak French, and I raise my son. I have him half time, so when he's with me, we just speak French at home. So it's good for us to be around other French speakers.
Absolutely. Mm. You're listening to WMPG, Southern Maine Community Radio, broadcasting from USM. I'm Kate Manahan, and this is New Mainers Speak. If you're just joining us, welcome. My guest today is Orson Horkler, otherwise known as Pigeon. That's his artist name. Orson was American-born and then raised in France. He returned to find that he had a lot in common with immigrants in Maine. He is an artist and has made a big point out of asking viewers to consider what makes a Mainer a Mainer. Will you tell us about your art, Orson?
Yeah.
Pigeon?
So, yeah. So, as you asked me last question, where would I feel like I belong? I still don't feel like I belong. I spent about 2 years in New York City, where for some reason I felt like I did belong, and maybe it was a good balance of Americanness and foreignness and Europeanness and all that. So I grew up in a place where I feel like I never belonged. I don't think everybody else around me felt like they belonged. And then I've lived in cold, really hard culture shock in Northern Maine, and I still don't feel like I quite belong. So, at some point, I was in Bangor about 3.5 years ago, and I decided that I was walking at night. And one thing that also I think is very different about the U.S. and that me as well as my African friends say is there's not much street life. So Portland is really nice because people walk out at night, but mostly people just go home and watch TV here in the U.S. And I went to towns in Cameroon in West Africa, 5,000 inhabitants, and a Tuesday night is bopping. Like, everybody's on the street pulling out the football tables and they just hang out and talking with their friends, arguing about politics. And so for me, that's always something that's very hard when I'm in a rural area and I get really physically claustrophobic, like panicky feeling. So I was walking in Bangor and it was maybe 8 o'clock at night and there's nobody. And I was like, okay, that's it. I realized how I spent most of my life alienated by where I lived and decided to do something about it. So for myself, I went out and I was like, okay, I'm going to make the city look like I want it to look. So I went out and I started, I just looked up a YouTube video about how to do wheat paste, which is my medium.
Wheat paste?
Yeah. So it's a homemade glue where you can put posters on walls. And so I did that. I went out and I started putting stuff up, and it was very exciting. It felt like a teenager the first time you break out of the house, but before you know it, a lot of people in the community were relating to what I was doing and really happy about it and finding it as a way to express that they wanted change in the community, that they wanted more stuff to happen, that they wanted it to be more like them. And so that's when I realized it was a whole other level where I feel like people needed that. And I started thinking about so many problems in the world where places in the world from Jerusalem to New Jersey, where people are somehow being told by institutions, by laws, by people, by customs, by attitudes that they don't belong. And so that kind of became my mission, was to use my street art to create community by confronting all these things and to define not feeling at home as a major issue that from which a lot of problems can be looked at. So
almost a nationalistic viewpoint, right? Where it's us and them. If you have a home,
yeah,
and you're either from here or you're not from here.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think it becomes so complex where even people who are from here, I also, like in my artwork, I also acknowledge people who have been here for many generations and who claim that they don't feel at home because they see immigrants coming. So my My latest project is called the Mainer Project, and it's basically drawings of people that I know in Maine. Some of them are from long lineage of even pre-European. There's some Wabanaki in there. They're all portraits of people who live in Maine, and some of them are Muslim, some of them are black, some of them are Mexican, some of them are lobstermen, some a little bit of everything, and then just have the name Mainer underneath them. And just and then I did that once in Portland on the street in Congress, and then I got invited to do it in Farmington, Maine, which was very different, very much a rural area. And so it was a chance to just, some people found it really shocking. Like the last time in Farmington, people offered to use those images as target practice to paint over the mural in the night. Some people said they felt insulted by the fact that, and also other people, there was also some questions as to why this mural did not represent people who are working and paying taxes. So all this is stuff that I want to get out into the open and have people talk about.
And it has done that.
Yeah.
It has invited many conversations.
Yes.
What did you say to the people who thought that when you were an immigrant, you weren't paying taxes?
Well, I let the conversation go for a while, because the best thing is when other people, especially in an area like Farmington where there's very little diversity, and so people might be open and tolerant, but you don't have much of a chance to articulate that. So it's good. I like watching the conversations go and for people to articulate that, people to be offended, be like, hey, you know, how come you made that assumption and all that? And then once the conversation goes for a while, I like to just say the facts, because I know, except for one person on this mural, who's a Somali elder in Lewiston, I know everybody on there. So I tell them the facts, that the fact that there are, out of nine, there are eight who are working. There are three who have more than one job. There are four working parents. Four of them are born in Maine. What else? As far as I know, they all pay taxes except for one, who's a senior citizen.
That's the new Mainer, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But there's an issue in Maine. There's even an issue of, in Farmington, they have an issue with people who are from away, as in Lewiston, as in Augusta.
Yeah.
So that's something that, yeah, I just find it unacceptable. I find it unacceptable that people would you know, because of your appearance, they say you belong somewhere or you don't. I find it unacceptable that if you're living, loving, and working in a place, you're still made to feel like you don't belong. And yet we all internalize it. Like, I've done it so long in Maine, where I was like, okay, it's all going to be me trying to make up and try to almost be as good as everybody else and be a part of the culture. And I want that to happen less, because I want people who are living in a place to feel like if they see diversity, it's a huge opportunity, you know. And Maine is really missing that, I think, right now, on the outside anyway. Like, it seems from listening to politicians, to policy, to seeing the businesses and how they're hiring and everything, that they're totally missing out the fact that we have this workforce coming in of everything we need: young people, educated. Immigrants are 2.5 times more. Have 2.5 times more college degrees than people who've been here, who were born here. We have that coming in. We have people who are back home were lawyers, engineers, and we make them start from scratch in the educational system. Or so we're really, and that's just the economics. I mean, for me, it's also just enriching life. So just being in a place where this culture and. Yeah,
I think this is an important project, and it's opened a lot of people's eyes. Your Mainer project, what's your best hope for it? What do you see for its future? Before you say that, actually, yeah. I just wanted to clarify. These are giant posters, each individual sketches that have been blown up of individuals you've met in Maine.
Yes.
And then you wheat paste them onto public walls.
Right.
Okay. I don't think I made that clear, and I just want to have people have a visual image of what your project looks like.
Yeah, and people can go on my Facebook page. It's facebook.com/pigeonnation, as in one word, pigeonnation. and to see what we're talking about. So,
and I'll have links on my website to your show.
And some people might have seen it too when I had it on Congress this summer.
Yes.
So.
Might sound familiar.
Yeah.
So what's your hope for the Maynard project?
Well, one thing that I found out going to Farmington was how, because I didn't plan that, I got invited by University of Maine to come up and do it, was how it was different in every community. And so that's really exciting, because I think doing it in Portland is one thing where people are used to seeing diversity, even if there's still so much to solve. But taking it to another community just meant different reactions, different thing, reaching more people. So I would love to be to take it to more places in Maine. That's one thing. And then I do work with kids every once in a while on street art, vandalism, immigration, and all that stuff. So I think that could develop as well. But
I think you're uniquely poised to advocate for inclusion of vulnerable new immigrants and new Mainers because of your own experiences. And you may not be as obvious a new Mainer. So
absolutely.
We always say when someone's vulnerable, other people need to stand up for them. They don't sometimes have the power to stand up for themselves. And you're just so uniquely poised to do that. And you're doing it. So not only are you capable, but you're manifesting that.
I hope so. I mean, I'm kind of the... For some, I'm the gateway immigrant, and for others, I'm the gateway American. You know,
it depends on the optimist and pessimist.
Yeah, there's this interview of Manu Chao that I read years ago, where he said that because I think he has Spanish and French citizenship, and saying how he felt this deep guilt about having this dual citizenship from the developed world, while so many people are losing their lives trying to save their families and get into safe places and places where they can work and survive. And I think it's sort of the same for me. I also have guilt linked to where I grew up, and I left feeling like I could not help the situation. I could not help the racial tension, the gang activity or anything. And there's a deep-seated feeling of responsibility that I have, that I feel like I want to be able to do something to solve these issues that create these tensions, I guess. Yeah.
So to what do you attribute your success? You've been able to take that caring, bring it to a place where you feel like you have a voice and express yourself. How did you get so good at that?
That's a complicated, it's probably the most personal question. Yeah, I mean, one thing is just it's hard work. I sleep 4 hours a night. I don't watch television. I have my own spiritual lack thereof ethic. I'm an atheist. I believe there's only one life, and I make my own meaning. So every day I wake up and I know I really cherish the day, and I want to make sure to do my fullest, my best with it. And I just take it full on, and yeah.
Orson, I love your courage to speak up through the use of your art, to challenge people to consider their ideas and to choose their words carefully around naming who does and doesn't belong to a place. And I think everyone needs to belong and feel at home somewhere. Your artwork is provocative and delightful, and I thank you so much for coming on the show
today. Thank you so much for having me. And I love your show. I love the fact you're giving voice to people's, to the new Mainers.
Thank you. I'm Kate Manahan, and this is New Mainers Speak. We're closing with Orson Horkler, and he has chosen a song for us today. Why have you queued this song up, Orson?
So this is a song by the French rap group NTM, Supreme NTM, and it's a song that it's from a band from the suburbs of Paris. And they really offered like an alternative to youth when I was growing up, as you know, exploring art and music instead of joining gangs. And this is a song that they went to prison for 6 months for singing it because it was threatening the state, apparently. And when you listen to it, this is the energy that when I'm out in the street, I'm doing my street art at night and trying to hide from the police to get my posters up. This is the kind of music I hear in my head.
Thank you.
conséquent. Debout dire que la France avance alors qu'elle pend. Par la répression jusqu'au pénètre la délinquance. S'il vous plaît, un peu de bon sens d'écho ne régleront pas l'état d'urgence à cause. Ce qui m'amène à me demander combien de temps tout ceci va encore durer. Ça fait déjà des années que tout t'aurais dû péter. Dommage que l'unité n'était de notre côté. Mais vous savez que ça va finir mal. La guerre des mondes, vous l'avez voulu, la voilà.
Tu vois pas, tu fais semblant, tu m'entends pas. Je crois plutôt que t'es, t'as encore pas vraiment le choix. Beaucoup.